Prognosis, a podcast with J.M. and Armon Rhee.
Greetings, everyone and anyone. Welcome to Prognosis. I'm JM, joined alongside my good friend Armon Rhee. And we are pleased to say that we've known each other for years now and have gained many valuable insights together and from one another. Along with that, I'd say a close friendship has grown as well. And you approached me recently to speak out more. You've always pushed it through the years that I've known you for me to do so. But it certainly wasn't time yet. But somehow you've roped me in, and I'm happy to be a part of this. And I couldn't think of anyone else out there, if they were to extend such an invitation, that I'd be so happy to join alongside and do it with. So thank you for that, buddy.
And well, likewise, Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have a lot to offer too. So I've been trying to, well, not trying to convince per se, but, you know, planting the seed of you also sharing your own homework notes that you picked up along the way. And whether it would be in a format like this or some other, I think you have valuable insights to share as well. So here we are, man.
Here we are. Thanks for that. You know, thinking about through the years we've gotten to know one another, it's when you begin something like this, it's kind of going through the entire volume of encyclopedias we've gathered, right? And you ask yourself, what is it? What do you even begin with? Where do you begin with this? And for me, it's an elusive answer. It at times feels impossible to comprehend some of the things we've come to see and recognize within reality. But I feel as though we have to start where we stand, right?
Oh, yeah, Patrick, yes.
That was sort of planned to put in that shameless Patty plug.
Yeah, man. We got to invite him one day.
Of course.
We have to. I hope he gets reception in the woods.
Yeah.
And he's still in the woods, isn't he?
Oh, we're all in the woods, but he's in the woods, I think.
Yeah.
But he, Patty, if somehow the stars align and you can tune in and follow in any way, we certainly wish you nothing but the very best each and every day, my friend.
I'll be sure to send him the link to this, and I'm sure he'll be touched by that, and will, I mean, he won't say no. He'll participate.
He has no choice.
Yeah.
He's in the cult, right? He's in the Prognosis cult, whether he knows it or not.
Cult. Yeah. Oh man. No, don't start with that.
Yeah, I know, right? We have to get that shit out of the way now.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
Yeah. Well,
I have been a follower of your contemplations on YouTube since we first met, and what they've done for me has been, I'd say, instrumental in me getting to a point of realization that perhaps if I hadn't found you, wouldn't have happened the way it has. But again, with the volumes of homework and notes that you've gathered through the years, and you've spoken of in other channels, podcasts, through your own videos, what seem to be your motivations for wanting to speak out in a more broad way, perhaps?
Well, I must start by saying that you have also been incredibly supportive and an incredible friend over the years that we've been in touch. And I mean, perhaps only you know the full extent of, for example, the last year I've had. And I also thank you for that. And I'm absolutely certain that, in a manner of speaking, the stars aligned for us to be friends and be supportive to each other. So with that out of the way, answering your question, I mean, I've been a listener for years and years before I participated or contributed with anything. And for years and years, I would just be the lurker on YouTube channels when YouTube was still a place that you would have this variety of content that you could find of the controversial controversial of subjects that would just be there available and even promoted by YouTube. The recommendations would just send you there. And I've been not just YouTube, but other means as well. But as an example, and I've just been a listener for several years, doing my own observations and, you know, living my my life and reaching a few realizations, until it came to a point where I felt that I had listened so much that I felt that I had something to contribute as well. And so I just didn't know exactly how it could be done. So I just one day sat and wrote a small piece on a word processor and recorded it and uploaded. And after that, you know, more and more came to me for, you know, sharing with others. And so it just flowed from there. You know, there was no plan, either on the sense of a frequency, like I would do this at a regular basis, or, you know, once a week or whatever. No, there was no plan at all, neither of the frequency nor of the subjects that I would touch upon, because everything was just flowing. And when the videos, when I was active with the contemplation videos, it was really as it was arriving to me. I mean, there was no, absolutely no plan with that. And that is also something that describes my process, let's say, which is really allowing observation to take you to the place where you need to be so that you can then be found by the realization. You know, so observation carries you to a place, to a state, if you like, where then realization finds you, because it's continuously trying to find us, I believe.
Okay. So basically you're saying in the early days, you were a voyeur.
Yeah, well, peeking through the windows of YouTube and other formats, yeah.
Yeah, same here. Much the same here. And I suppose that's really the only route for us these days in the modern world, right? We are at the mercy of technology, yet we use it for so much. And we determine its use, I suppose, and its value. But if it weren't for these outlets that we have such easy access to, I wouldn't have been able to observe any of this, really. I mean, it sets you on the path. And the path, of course, takes you in many directions. But the observation while on the path, to me, has always been one where you have to carry, as you become more experienced, of course, the filters, as we always mention, right?
Yeah.
The filters are everything. And what are the filters? That is, to me, the ability to discern the real from the unreal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that can go in many different directions. But again, if you know, these necessary evils bring people like you and I together, and many others that you've reached out to, and then a very select few that I'm proud to say that I'm close to as well because of these things. So we'll see where this takes us. I'm sure there will be more that we meet along the way that perhaps we can share with, or they can do in return. But yeah. I'd say moving along, again, as I mentioned before, there's so many mm-hmm. different ways we could take this, right? I mean, we can go anywhere from the highest of personal realizations to dogs, to sports, to banter, to answering comments, taking calls, all these kind of things. And I think all this will evolve beautifully over time. But for people...
I would like, John, to interject there. And say that, well, you've just touched upon a key point that is probably very overlooked, which is the subject of dogs and cats as well. But, you know, and you know the importance that dogs had in our pets as sort of mirrors to the observations and realizations we were having. And what is your, I mean, let's start there. What is your view on the importance of observing the, let's say, animal companions that we choose to have in our lives? I mean, what has, for example, Tessie and Abby now, what was the importance of them in this process that you were just describing?
Well, within this construct, it's you can use anything to observe meaning, and that meaning is personal to you. We're in a position now where there's this push, and has been for a while now, of collective meaning. It starts from the very beginning of all of this. But in terms of personal meaning, for some reason, in my time here, dogs have been the thing, the one single thing, no matter what form or color or breed they come in, have been the most important thing to me, in the sense that I feel my connection to them the most. And yeah. I've been lucky since I was a boy, basically, of having them as an ever-present within my time. And I had unique and fun relationships with all of them. But I discovered at an early age that there was just a different type of love and connection to them. One that I didn't have for people. And at the time growing up, especially, but then even as I've grown into an adult, the various relationships I've had, friendships and otherwise, you grow a bond, but there's a different type of bond with pups for me. And I've actually spent the better part of my journey to where we are today with a great pup by my side, and basically has been an anchor for me, if you will, in times that dip into a bit of darkness or whatever you want to call it. That connection and that love has gotten me through, and I'm proud to say that I have a wonderful buddy now named Abby, as you mentioned. But getting back to the question, what it means to me is simply when you have recognition of something that you truly care for, in this example, the pups, of course, you have the unique opportunity, because of that focused attention, to see aspects of yourself as you grow along that path or within that relationship. Mm-hmm. And we live in the Western society, for the most part, where these type of pets are commercialized, right? They are more just companions. We could take some funny videos. They're around for the kids as they come up through their upbringing. And the pet is just kind of an accessory to a household or to an environment. But for me, it's always been one where when I care for something that much, it's not an accessory, it's a responsibility. And within that responsibility, I take it very seriously, and I become far more selfless, if you will, within my day-to-day experiences. And that's a giving that can only come from that type of connection. That's, to me, is what genuine giving actually is. And there are times through my life, up until even recently, where I struggle to recognize love or feel love for reasons that I'm sure we'll get into much more deeply on further chats. But it showed me that I'm capable of it, and it, in my core, is who I am. You know, when you break down all the character aspects of who we are and what we have built upon for these images, there's very few things that can be compared to the genuine desire to nurture something. And for me, each person is different in terms of how they view it, and or how they go about it, or if meaning, if any, they get from it. But it's for me created a discipline that I likely would not have attained otherwise. And that discipline has carried into all aspects of my life, and most importantly, in my personal contemplations. And it's been a huge tool, and we all use tools in various ways to get here. I call it the realization tool belt. And you have, you know, various things that you can go to at any time to continue constructing your view or your awareness of all things, or whichever you choose. But getting back to it, upon that close bond for so long, and that grows over time, it doesn't diminish as a pup gets older. It only grows stronger because they need you more. They become more dependent on you in various ways. They slow down. And inherently, that is, to me, what has become one of the biggest mirror reflections of my own true essence, is that it was time, as I got older and I got more experienced on the path, to slow down a little bit, release some of that exuberant youthful energy that I exuded for so long, and become more aware and more aligned with reaching out a little bit more for help if I needed it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And no, I can relate. I can relate completely with what you described. And I would add two things. One is that the dogs have this innate sort of innate ability to carry the filters that we can relate to. And when I say filters, is in the sense that you were talking about what is real and unreal, and they can detect your intent, for example, without you doing any gestures, without you doing, you know, any action at all, or speaking or whatever, just by your presence. They can detect, they have a filter that can detect whether your intentions are real or not, right? Mm-hmm. Until, of course, they trust you, and then it becomes a given. But at a first glance, they do have innately this. Some do not use it and are trained not to use it, but they do have it. And that carries over to us, I think. And if we observe them well, we can sort of learn this from them as well. Yeah. Another aspect is that, as you know, I've in some contemplations, I have used the metaphor of the character, the mental character that we carry around at a certain time, being this sort of dog as well,
yeah,
right, and the dog loves, is loved, and answers to the master, which would be, in this metaphor, would be the ego, yeah, that himself is a dog of another master, which is the essence. And so in this chain, let's say, we can observe so much when we observe a dog. We can observe so much of that same chain inside of us, of that same mental character that responds to the ego, and of that ego that responds to the essence, if things flow correctly. Yeah. Of course, along the way, it can happen, and as it happens to dogs that become dominant over humans, for example, they invert. And this inversion can also occur in the same chain that I was just describing and using metaphorically, where a character can become the dominant part of the relationship and subdue the ego, and therefore subduing the entire construct of that individual, mental construct of that individual, to its needs and to itself. But this only happens if the ego does not take the leadership position, It's the same as a dog, as you well know. You train dogs and you know this. If you do not take the leadership position, the dog will fill in that void because it feels that there's a lack there that needs to be filled. And so that comparison, that observation, if any listeners have dogs, observe it in that sense. If your dog is dominating you in the sense of it is dictating completely what goes on, then it means that you're not putting it in its appropriate place and putting yourself in your appropriate place, which would be the place of the master, let's say. And of course, master here, not in a negative sense, but in a more positive sense, of course. But you're not filling in that leadership, and the dog is looking for that leadership in the same sense that a mental character is looking for that leadership from the ego, because it assumes and it knows and it's hardwired to think, to believe that the ego is supposed to receive its instructions, so to say, its insights from the essence itself. So that observation will open up a lot of avenues of further contemplation and realization for the listeners if you observe your dog in this metaphorical sense, as if it was showing you your mental character at that given time, and showing you if the mental character is indeed acting healthily in this natural chain of, in this case, mental character, ego, and essence, or if it's taking a leadership position, which will only cause him stress, like the mental character will become stressed by assuming leadership position, because it doesn't have the overview that that the other positions have. And so it will give you a diagnosis, let's say, of your present state. So I would like just to add that, Jam.
Yep, no question. And you know, the one thing you ask of yourself is what defines a good dog? And I think for me, it comes down to simple obedience, right? Before anything else, you want obedience. And how I've come to observe my own self just through that thought alone through the years is extraordinary, because as we talk about mental characters and how easily we become susceptible to influences that within this reality, let's face it, are designed to influence the mind, designed to basically, in broad terms, take over the mind. And so as a dog becomes more obedient, more mature over time, upon reflection, especially on a path or a journey that is the one that we're on, obedience becomes a completely different definition for me. And I think much the same for you. And what I mean by that is, when you're a puppy, and we talked about that energy, that desire to go, to find, to seek, to have adventures, to live, mm-hmm. to discover your reality more, as that begins to fade and you grow into that maturation phase, that to me is a huge metaphor for what we're talking about. And that is, we do the same with ourselves if we're in recognition and awareness of higher aspects beyond ourselves. And as the world becomes more of that circus or more unreal, you almost naturally begin to let go of that youthfulness that I mentioned. And you go through that metaphorical maturation of seeing something that very few begin to see. And through that, letting go of certain attachments, emotional, mental, physical attachments through time, that obedience becomes full adulthood, if you allow it to, of course. depending upon how far you wish to go with it or the messages that you receive. But in short, obedience is almost a compromise or a sacrifice of oneself in some way. Despite certain wants or desires, that maturation sets in, and you recognize, if you're looking at the mirror or what the dog can reflect back to you, in a sense, you see that you become a servant to something more. That when I say servant, I'm not saying waiting tables or going, if you're a dog, going and getting a beer out of the fridge for your owner. But yeah. More, as I, in experiences I've had with older dogs, and you know, Tessie Well, who lived to be 15, when I mentioned before about those moments where you kind of dip into the dark and you disconnect from everything, she was in recognition of that. And she was right alongside me during each and every one of those moments. And she served me in a way that nothing else within this reality could have done. And when you look at that on a much broader scale, a much deeper introspective scale, that to me is the relationship that ultimately blossoms between what is known as the self and that of the higher essence.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we need to just clarify that, as you've well stated, this obedience is obedience to the healthy next in line within your own soul, right? So the mental character would be obedient to the ego, and the ego would be obedient to the essence. And this this is the healthy way. And there has been in the New Age, wave, if you like, that, you know, in the recent decades has grown and been promoted to do just that.
Yeah.
One of the first focus of that New Age paradigm has been to attack the ego.
Yeah.
And if you attack the ego, you basically attack the master of the dog in this metaphorical sense. So it means that the mental character will be released from the leash, let's say, metaphorical leash, and released from this expectation of leadership on the one that was supposed to be the guardian of the mind.
Yes.
Because if the mental character is the one that interacts with the world, is the persona, let's say, that interacts with the world, the ego is the actor wearing that mask. And so the mental character has to obey the actor. Otherwise, it can't be played properly, right? The character does not exist by itself. It requires the ego to be played. The persona requires the ego to play it, right?
Yeah.
To be it, in a sense. So the issue comes when being a mental construct, and any mental construct, even those that do not have a life of their own, will have a survival instinct, will have this urge to maintain its form, let's say, to avoid dissolution. And what happens with a persona, what happens in a healthy situation with a persona, is that that persona is performing a function, and then allows, when that function is no longer needed, it allows itself to be put back into its place, let's say, to be, you know, waiting. It's like the sit command for a dog, right? Wait. And it's able to wait patiently for the next time when it's needed, if ever, and allow the other dog next to it to perform the next function that the context requires. And what by attacking the ego, the capability of choosing healthy personas, of choosing healthy dogs in this metaphorical sense, is removed.
Yeah.
So it increases the problems, the mental problems, the soul problems of humans in present society. And then again, bombarded by external stimuli, from media fakery to problems on a day-to-day basis, through paying taxes, through, you know, all this thing that is demanded by a society that wasn't built surely to promote this understanding, this realization. Mm-hmm. So to be healthy amidst all of this, or to be as healthy as possible, the natural mental or soul hierarchy has to be respected. And probably, I would ask your opinion, probably that is one of the readings of the obedience kind of thing that you see in some religions that was then skewed,
yeah,
to become a more social obedience, right, than an internal one, right?
Yeah, of course it was. I mean, you have to have the recognition of where we are at all times, right? And yeah, that takes time. That's not something where in your first couple of years of discovering what we've come to know and see that it happens. It takes a lot of time to recognize what is and what isn't within this experience. But yeah, following up with that, it's I would say that it's when you do get to the point when you become more obedient within that recognition of playing more of a service role instead of participating within the character role. Service role, of course, I'm talking about higher self, eternal essence, mm-hmm, however you wish to state it.
Yeah.
It's something that you can't go back from. And I think if you look at it, that's one of the bigger reasons why some people, whether you want to call it within the New Age movement or let's just call it what it is, the so-called truther movement, which has become just as much of a circus as the narrative and the script outside of us, right?
Or
that,
oh, yeah,
that we,
yeah,
exist within. you basically, you find yourself asking the question, what next? Not for the circus playing, not for what's on the screen, but you're asking what's next for us. And for those who reach and achieve this metaphorical obedience, right? And that's a question for me that I've asked for years now, the better part of 6 to 7 years. What's next? And I wasn't anywhere near 6 or 7 years ago where I am today. I'm not saying it's better or worse than anyone else out there, but for me, it's, mm-hmm, it's been an extraordinary leap in awareness. But the reason why I recognize now why I struggled so much with this question is the fact that I wasn't trusting, right? I wasn't trusting that aspect of myself that I had since discovered that has the ability to observe this from beyond the muck that we're in, correct? And yeah, that with that, excuse me, you recognize also that there's a hint of perhaps remnant pride that remains from the mental character, yeah, where you feel as though you have to know, or you have something you have to do. Please let me know, guide me, show me. And that is something that has held me back. Maybe others can relate to it in a way where, yeah, it's not a full letting go. And I think that's what obedience really is. It's the recognition of you having trust of your leader or whoever is guiding you, whatever is guiding you. And you can feel safe and know that you're going to be put in a direction that is going to always lead you down a better path and not one,
oh, yeah,
that's going to put you in any kind of danger. And that's what I feel the responsibility, or that's how I personally feel responsibility with the pups that I've cared for over the years. And that's where the connection truly grows, is once they know and that you know you can trust one another, you can have far more relaxing scenarios, situations, no matter where you go in life. And I'm finding that personally, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. And you've mentioned pride. And pride to me is the pride at the mental character level is already a copy, let's say, a fractal of what I think was the original sin, if we can call it that, which is pride. And I think that it is pride. And pride always leads and is fed by, it leads to and is fed by shame. And if we take, for example, this is something that I normally use as a metaphor. I mean, if we take the mythology, the Christian mythology, let's say, and we see God on one side and the devil on the other, where does the devil come from? Well, the devil was created by God, and it was created as is a prodigal son. You know, as this magnificent, perfect creation that was given free will, and the use of that free will was used by that creation to point out the pride, the initial pride that was there in the self-image of God, and this caused the. It proved the point, because God, in a proud manner, rejected the message. Mm-hmm. And by rejecting the message, it made that perfect being turn into a shadow, into a reflection. It cast it down to hell, let's say, and it became the shadow that the devil is. It's basically a shadow of God. And so in that, transporting that to what you were saying, inside of us, If the pride on one side or the other is ruling, and when I say pride, I say it in a negative sense. Of course, you can be proud of the good achievements, but that is a sort of humble pride, right? But pride in a negative sense will always lead the proud to be ashamed eventually. Mm. It will always be. There will be a counterforce created, an inversion that is a reflection that will, of course, be played out on reality. It will be played out on the external world, but also on the internal world, because one thing reflects the other. And eventually, shame will be there to show that that thing that was rejected shouldn't have been rejected. It is a part. It carries a message that was supposed to be heard. And of course, it grows and grows the more rejected it is, and it becomes even grotesque. It reaches a point of being grotesque if it's left unattended and if it's left ignored. So the sooner one identifies by self-contemplation and also contemplation of external factors, which, like I've just said, reflect also the internal factors, the sooner we identify that there is something, some proud element that is rejecting a message coming from the other side of the same psyche, of the same soul, then the easier it will be, because it will not grow in strength. It will not generate that metaphorical skeleton army, right? The skeletons in the closet. The more skeletons you have in the closet, the more it becomes an army, the more it grows. So that confrontation eventually always comes. And it is inescapable. There's one thing that you cannot, I mean, people say that you can't evade death nor taxes, right? Mm. But also I would say you cannot evade yourself.
Yes.
You have to live with yourself. Regardless, until your expiration day comes. So that is inescapable, and it's not an option. even. Mm-hmm. So the sooner that progress is made, that humble contemplation of what is really there, not what I would like to be there, yeah. not the way that my self-image would prefer, and that is already a pride, right? But what is actually there? What is it telling me? What is the message? The sooner that is done, the sooner that humility is achieved in the sense of an observation, the better it will be, because it will not grow into even grotesque levels, as we see in society.
Yeah.
And society now is reflecting back at the society's self-image, all the rejections that grew and grew and grew and become grotesque. And we see grotesque, and it's not, I mean, it's not the media. It's not the media. Even just talking to people on the streets, seeing how they behave, seeing how they sometimes, you know, make their choices and carry their lives and so on and so forth, we see it sometimes reaches a point of a grotesque kind of behavior. And it only grows to that point because it was never attended to, because it was never acknowledged, you know?
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's so many different ways of stating it. You could go from basically what you just mentioned, which would be the creation, the point of creation and how it all became, mm-hmm. to anything as far as, like you said, current society. And yeah. the influences in terms of prodding and triggering those prides and shames. Well, we're dealing with a reality that has designed it this way. It was designed this way, in a sense that there was always going to be some kind of dualistic aspect to it. And I think mm-hmm. some people would argue what they think duality is and what it means to it all. But it's obvious that there are two sides. Or mm-hmm. let's just say sides in general, right? And so it's very easy to play upon those prides and shames when you are within a programmed experience that is constantly trying to pick a side. It doesn't matter what side it is. It doesn't matter what form, in what shape in any way. It just wants you to pick one or the other. And when you do that, that means that you are in opposition to something else, right?
Correct.
So that opposition is in many ways what creates a huge form in this current reality, pride, right? Because there's always something, as I mentioned, to pull you in a certain direction. And how they do it is by preying upon what they know within the design that they are basically controlling. And that is how easy it is to toy with humans. And so... Yeah. You know, you look outside of ourselves and you see the circus in the screen, 24/7 constant mind entertainment. And it's very easy in a modern reality to now, because of all the sensory gratification that's out there, gravitate towards what you think you like. And as the construct has grown through time, you can see there's been a more aggressive push to getting you to feel more passionately about the side that you choose. So much so that we're going to go to war with the opponent if we have to show just how prideful we are about our cause or whatever it is that we think we're supporting, right?
Yeah. And it's absolutely, just to interject there, it's absolutely irrelevant to them, to the reality manufacturers, let's say, or if you like, controllers.
Yes.
What side you choose, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. It doesn't matter which side you choose as long as you're invested.
Yes. You know. And we, you know, it could be debated how what actually is being harvested from all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Why they go to such lengths to do all these things to take over the mind. We see, you know, those like you and I, we see a bigger picture, of course, in terms of why they do it and how they do it. But there are many now that are becoming more aware of this, But within that awareness, and this is when I mentioned things like the truth community before and what it's become, a place where once you felt that pride almost to be a part of, because you're coming across people who are seemingly going through the same unexplainable experience that you suddenly are. Once you begin to grow out of that, isn't it funny how that community that you felt so close to before, they almost begin to shame those who outcast themselves from that particular topic or that particular movement, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It behaves in the same way.
Exactly right.
It is the same thing. It's the same as, you know, I support this soccer club and you support the other one. So, you know, you lost that game and I won. So I'll shame you for that because I was, you know, I was right and you were wrong. And then later on, it's the other way around. And usually one side will not accept that they were wrong. So it becomes a completely irrelevant discussion.
Yeah.
At whichever level it's held. Because if it is a confrontation between two sides, if it is a bifurcation of two sides, then it's already part of the problem. And contemplation does not judge per se. It attributes meaning,
yes,
which is something different. So judgment implies that there's that there is pride in a way, that there is a right on one side and a wrong on the other, when all that there is in this chain that we were talking before, that we used the metaphor for dogs, the only thing that that is there is love. Mm. Is love that goes two ways. The dog loves the master loves the dog. And this is healthy.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of pride and shame. And there are people who treat their dogs by shaming them. And they do this because it's the same thing that happens inside them.
Yeah.
You know? And they carry it over to this external relationship that they have. So the best, I would think, the best position, the proper position, and this is, of course, just my view and it's only worth as much as that, is to try to, as much as possible, be in the middle. And be observant from a middle point of these two sides and gather the fruits, because there are fruits, there are pieces of the puzzle on these both sides, and carry, gather them, put them in their place from your point of view and move on. Do not get involved, because getting involved in a dichotomy is feeding into exactly what you're trying to avoid. And it happens in truth communities, it happens in New Age, it happens in religion, it happens even in family business, even in family relations, it happens, right? You take the side of one family, of one relative that doesn't like the other one, or you take the side of the other one that doesn't like the first one, and it goes down the same, it's exactly the same, the same relationship there. And one, it brings me one thing that I was thinking about, which is how often, and I will put this as a question for you, how often are we unable to pick up a puzzle piece, something that is fruitful that another has gathered, if you don't like that person, that individual, right? Imagine you don't like someone, but that someone has something to say. And that's something that he has to say, probably has a little piece, even if it's just a little piece, that you can use and that you were supposed to gather for your own, you know, your own process. How often do we reject even listening because we don't like that other person, their demeanor or the things that they did in the past or whatever it is, whatever the reason it is? How often? And this is also a mistake.
Yeah. Well, to answer the question, it's quite often. And we're all guilty of it. Yeah. No one excluded with this. But it's because of that kind of that picking of sides. When you pick a side, there becomes this comfort with a groupthink mentality, right? No one likes to stand alone. It's too scary. You're putting yourself out there too much, whatever. So let's go ahead and just hold on to that small thing where there's other people involved and it's warm and cozy. And that creates a comfort, right? And again, each and one of us are guilty of it throughout our time. And so when you look at that, and knowing that there's opposing views to what, even though you're in that bubble, there's opposing views to it. It creates a tension. It creates a conflict, and that fundamentally is part of this design. It's ever present. It can't ever be but that. So, when you're not in recognition of a bigger picture, when you can't move on from that singular point of that side that you've chosen, and there's dozens of them, of course. That fear of letting go and being objective is inherently a fear in some way, right? Yeah. There is something that you're holding on to. There's something that you haven't, that you are in, you're unaware of because of the fact that you simply can't find the courage to look more deeply inside yourself. And as you mentioned, facing yourself or living with yourself is all you really have. Death taxes living with yourself. I thought it was brilliantly put. it's so true. And how often do we just simply avoid it? Now I'm talking, you know, when you talk about the everyday person who we know is still sleepwalking in various ways, they wouldn't even know what the hell we're talking about. But when you start talking to those who have begun the particular journey towards some kind of truth, you know, that letting go is some would say the final piece, right? Mm-hmm. Because maybe not the final piece, let's say. There's certain levels, I'll retract and say there's definitely certain levels of letting go. But along the way, there's other smaller ways that other things that come into your life that you attach to that you eventually do learn to let go of, because you see that dualistic aspect to it. And that is essentially how they control a mental character here. It seems to be the foundation of what this whole thing is. And they will go to lengths of war, or what we've been told is war, right? Let's put it that way. This fantastic, destructive force that has rolled through the centuries, that we've basically written the world history stage off of or on. We see it obviously as something of a farce, if you will. Yeah. We question it more and more, but it's the foundation, right? Yeah. And so how do you build upon a foundation? Well, it's simple. If there's one objective, and that is to capture the mind, the mind's within your design. You do it in a way that can be collectively seized. And what is that? It's fear. It is the desire to fit in, because we don't have any answers. We go and we become educated, but there's something inside of us that's saying we still don't have any answers. And so that's why you see this game of life imitation all around us through the generations. We are simply imitating what we see around us because we have absolutely no idea what this is or what we should be doing with it. So we follow what we are told or what the expectations are expressed to be. And when you're in that trap, which we know the vast majority of people within the current reality are, you almost feel as though you want to let go more. Because you see the disease. You see it from, again, you see it from outside looking in, so to speak, instead of inside looking out. And when you do that, the idea of taking sides, and I'm not talking about, you know, tuning into Benfica once a month just to see that their current form is a bad thing. or cheering when they score a goal. We still have to live our everyday lives, right? We can't just go into a cave and hope for our expiration day. We still have to exist and experience this reality each day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can have these mindless, harmless things that we tune into. You don't have to become a hermit and self-isolated, but at the same time, you do in some ways, of course. But wrapping it up, it's become quite evident through time just how deeply infected the minds of those around us have become because of these mental attachments. And the one that that seems to be the orchestrator of pushing this reality in the direction that they wish for it to go in is through fear, which we've seen more evident over the last 4 years, of course, than we ever have before, probably.
Yeah, I agree. And it is a good summary that you've just made of the situation. And we are supposed to act upon the world. That's why we have movement. That's why we have muscles, bodies. It is to interact. We are here to experience interaction at an individual and the collective level, set in a context, for sure. So that is, it is not to evade that. It is not to, like you said, sit in a cave and do nothing and wait for things for life to pass you over. But it is to be in the game, let's say, be in the context while observing the context, because there is a question that is continuously being asked by this reality. And I think that it is the question that preceded the creation of reality. And it is perhaps, not perhaps, but surely, I would say, the question that is asked at the end of reality, which is, who are you? Or, if you prefer, since the one that created was the one that asked, who am I?
Yeah.
Right. And this is continuously asked. And that is why we need to interact with these different, a multitude of different sets of potentials for the manifestation of the divine mind, let's say, putting it in a different language.
Well, put it in a blunt term, you can't dance without being on the dance floor.
That's right. Yeah. And you're supposed to dance, therefore. Yeah. If you're on the dance floor, dance, right? And the idea is not to exclude yourself from the dance floor. It's to be there and observe your own dance moves, the dance moves of the others, learn from the others, teach the others when they want to be taught, and go with always this observation with you, carrying this observation with you, because it is eventually what will lead to an approximation, at least, of the answer that that we require. And I think that the answer to that original question of who am I?
Well, you have to look at it in the sense of, would we have ever come to any real awareness or recognition without being on the dance floor? In the sense that, let's call it Panic at the Disco, right? If we're going to put it in a funny way, and that's what the reality has been, kind of become a Panic at the Disco, and that without the panic, would we have seen or begun to see the absurdity of some of the things that the reality tries to convince itself it is, correct? And when you talk about a lack of participation or self-isolation, being in the cave type of mentality, it inevitably does come at various points to some, depending upon where we're at in terms of contemplations and observations. But make no mistake, survival requires us to participate, and that is part of the necessary evil of this, right? But it also goes both ways. In order, let's just put it this way: in order for the higher aspect of itself asking the question, who am I within this experience, within this reality, within the realm itself? It has to be on the dance floor. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of recognition and awareness. And through that, as you begin to see more, you're going to find more mirrors upon observation of the experience, right? It's not as though you're like, okay, I'm achieving awareness of something. I'm seeing reality in ways that I haven't before. I'm transcending self in ways. I'm letting go of past emotional ties, perhaps mental ties. Like, I'm the finished product. Well, that's not going to be the case. I mean, not that you have to go out with binoculars looking for anything in particular, but
yeah,
realization will come within subtle observations. And you are always left with the idea and the understanding that this is an ongoing process, right? This isn't one where you reach the top of the peak and okay, I'm good, I'm there, I'm going to plant my flag, I'm good to go. It's a daily ongoing observation. And
yes,
when you talk about trust, you're not looking for answers. You're not even looking, really. You're just simply, you're stepping back and you're observing. And within that observation, you begin to see how, why things are perhaps the way they are, why they function, use. But more importantly, that you get the mirror reflections back at yourself based on some of these dualistic aspects, if you begin to feel them in various ways, such as pride or shame, jealousies, fears, yep, arrogance, vanity, all these things. We can list them for days, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we also need to note that the sort of opposition we get from the society itself, from the shadows of society, it is that opposition that allows us to reach at least the shortcut,
yeah,
towards some of the answers.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that opposition, if everything was just, you know, peachy, and life was excellent, we really wouldn't look. You know, we needed that amount of discomfort to be able to look. And that is the function that is, as I described earlier, I think that is exactly the function of the shadow. It is to deliver a message that the receiver is not really interested in getting.
Yeah.
Right. But it is a very persistent messenger. The shadow is a very, very persistent messenger that will only really let go when the message is not only read, but acknowledged,
yeah,
and understood. So
the lesson will repeat itself until learned.
Yes.
Go on.
So it is, yeah, it is absolutely that. And it makes us, it helps to make us in that sense. It helps to reveal us, in better words, even more than making us, it helps to reveal us, mm-hmm, to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And that is also, again, going back, that is also what dogs help with. You know, they reveal ourselves to ourselves,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I saw the true monster in me at times when a dog would just shit on the floor. as trivial as that might sound, I think, you know, you're talking about the recognition of the shadows within oneself. That, you know, those are the things we're talking about, right? As dumb as this example might be, is,
yeah,
you see what the shadows revealed to me is that of your potentials, right? We all try to, yeah, take this mental moral high ground based on a societal construct of one that we've just kind of latched onto upon entry. But the other side of it is that we are all born of many similar potentials, if not all the same, right? And
correct,
those potentials can only manifest based on circumstances. And what you've spoken of and what we've hit on are those exact circumstances that you can't, they're unavoidable. And, but you have to recognize that they can be useful. And that, how will you know if you achieve this new age Zen-like enlightenment and bliss living in the moment mentality unless someone comes over and spills your morning coffee on you, right?
Yeah.
How do you know you've achieved what you think you have unless you are put to the test? And that's basically what this place is in many ways. Some would call it a test. I don't necessarily see it as such, but perhaps within it, metaphorically, we are constantly tested until we can learn to achieve what it is we've mentioned before, right? Which again,
yes, absolutely.
Is ongoing.
Yes, it is ongoing. Yeah. Absolutely, JM. And well, I think that this has been a good, I mean, we've reached more or less the hour mark.
Yeah.
I think this has been a good startup episode, let's say, for our prognosis. We hope to bring several questions to the table, and we're open also to comments from the listeners and suggestions.
Yeah.
So hopefully someone will listen to this and will have a comment and will bring something to the table, and maybe we can discuss it for next time. And let's try to bring Patrick to one of the episodes. It would be great to hear from him.
Patty, we're coming for you, buddy. We're coming for you. We're gonna pull you out of the woods. It's time.
The hermit has to come back. Yeah.
Do you think he's cut his hair yet?
No. I don't think so.
He is true Gandalf.
You wouldn't do that.
Truly Gandalf. In all
Gandalf.
No, oh my gosh. Formally,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I for anyone who does tune in, please excuse what could be seen as some generalizations in many, many various, I'm sure you've noticed, deep avenues that we kind of hit on. And I think in time, when we get perhaps a more clear direction, or even not, we'll delve into some of these topics with a little more enthusiasm, and in the sense that we'll pick it apart, we'll dissect things more. So I think we've done a good job of pointing out some intriguing things. But like I said, there are encyclopedias worth of wisdom within my good friend Armud alone, and for those who've come across you, man, they can attest to that. So I'll definitely have more questions for you as well, and just let you go at times, because it is a fountain of wisdom. Whether you like
you're an advertiser, man.
Whether you like it or believe it or not, man, we're coming for you as well.
And advertisers are prone to exaggeration, like you just did.
Well, you know, I've been blessed to be in avenues of work throughout my adult life where I've had to appease humans and their little psyches, and entertain children, train dogs. So I learn a lot of just kind of basic praise, but these days I don't serve it out unless it's genuinely deserved. So take it for what it's worth, buddy. But I'm happy to be alongside you, and hopefully we can have many more fruitful chats. You bet, my friend. So we'll call it a day.
Likewise, I appreciate it. Yeah, let's call it a day. This was episode one of Prognosis. I hope to catch you some other time for episode two in the future.
Take it easy.
Prognosis, a podcast with JM and Armon Ree.